Hello, everybody. Welcome back into your latest episode of Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today's always your host, Evan Sider, and join my co-host, Brendan Queen. You can follow me on Twitter at eSider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanQueen14. This far, Locked On Suns page, we haven't already at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support over there is very much appreciated, as always. We're joining you guys here for our Thursday episode to talk a little bit more about the Suns' first half of the season. It's crazy to say, Brendan, we've already gone through 40 games, but that's indeed the case for the Phoenix Suns. They're fighting for the playoff spot for the 8th seed. They're currently 10th in the West Conference standings. Before we dive into that, Brendan, let me ask about your overall thoughts of the first 40 games of the season, because for me, they're definitely overachieving a little bit, but I think they're kind of settling back down into probably what we thought they'd be, at least over the last 6 or so weeks.
That's probably fair. You know, I was thinking yesterday, now that we're 40 games in and assuming, I don't know, maybe we can't, but assuming that they beat the Knicks, we're recording this on Wednesday, so tomorrow night, that'll put them at a 34-win pace to win 17 of the first 41 and 34 games. I predicted they'd win 35. 29.5 was kind of the closing over-under in Vegas. I think you're right to say that, you know, on the whole, this is about the type of team that we've thought that they would be. It's just been so hot and cold. And I don't just mean the 7-4 start followed by, you know, what have they been, 9-20 since. But, you know, even just the fact that they go on a long losing streak and then they win 2 of 4 in that December road trip, right, heading into New Year's Eve. And then they kind of have some duds at home to start the next home swing. And then, as we've seen the past little while, they win 2 to close out that homestand and now another loss to Atlanta. So I don't just mean 7-4 and what's happened since. I think that the inconsistency and just lack of consistent effort, especially, I think that's characterized this team all year. And so it makes it a little bit more difficult to analyze because they haven't just been your typical 35 type of win team. They've been one thing sometimes and a different thing a lot of the other times.
Yeah, interestingly enough, I'm looking on Clean the Glass right now for their expected wins over 82 games right now for the Suns. They'd be 36.5 per Clean the Glass, so they have a little bit higher expectations for the Suns to have a stronger finish to the season. They're currently 17th in offensive rating and 19th in defensive rating per 100 possessions on Clean the Glass. From a team aspect, Brian, I feel like it's a lot more organized this year. I think Monty Williams has a good foundation and structure in place for this team, and I think they're definitely responding more. As far as from a coach-to-player standpoint, I think Monty Williams is clicking more with this group than we've seen with the likes of Igor Kokoschkov, Jay Triana, or Earl Watson.
To me, you definitely, yeah, I agree. You definitely see just a structure and an identity, even though I have criticized recently just not knowing what the identity of the team is. I think kind of possession to possession, they don't have a lot of things in the course of a game that they can rely on, like as we saw without Ricky Rubio. Their offense really doesn't have much going for it. It's not an offense if pushing the pace is your offense. That's not good enough. They haven't been moving the ball as consistently. Little things like that. But I think big picture, the team is clearly going in a better direction. I think that, you know, we have seen progress in terms of consistency on the part of certain players. Kelly Oubre, not his last game notwithstanding. I think, you know, Devin Booker finding and really maturing in an off-ball role, that's a big picture thing that's going to last a lot longer than just this season. And I think defense, even though it hasn't been great over the past couple months, it's still more consistently competitive than it has been at any point in the last few years. And this is still one thing to note, I think, just whenever we talk about this team, but especially today as we think about the first full half of the year, is it's still the youngest team in the league. So, you know, that's not an excuse, but it does have to be considered when we talk about the progress of such a young roster.
Yeah, I really feel like overall with the Suns team this year, expectations were raised because, I mean, it's year 5 in Devin Booker's career. He's entering his max contract. You got Ricky Rubio in here, Aaron Baines, some solid veteran presence. How do you feel like this team has weathered the storm through these tough stretches this year? Because when the Suns got into a tough stretch last year or a couple years before that even, they would probably go in the tubes as far as the entire season goes. I mean, we saw in November, December, if the Suns got on a 7-8 game losing streak a year or two ago, I think they were going to go on a 15-20 game one. I think the Igor Koshkov last year, I think he had 18 game losing streak at one point, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Right around this time.
Yeah, right around there. And there was talks about him being fired if they didn't lose, winning against Miami Heat, but which is crazy to say. But
pick a game and decide that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like this team has, at least Monty Williams has done better in helping out, getting through those tough stretches. But what's been your assessment as far as the coaching staff and this veteran leadership through these kind of stretches for this team?
I think back to what Devin Booker said after the last game of the homestand, the victory there. And I don't remember. I know I asked him a question about his, maybe if he kind of gained a new perspective on winning, on, you know, everybody in the NBA, everybody in every sport talks about how hard it is to win. And sure, I mean, maybe not the MLB. It's not too hard to win one game in Major League Baseball. But I think I would have to assume that he has gained a new perspective on to be in these games, to have the expectation be that you can or even should in some situations win these games. Does that change things for you? You know, like think back to the Warriors and Bucks and Lakers wins in the spring of the 2018-19 season, and there was an understandable hesitancy to even buy in too much to that, because by that point in the year, teams like that are kind of, you know, they're in autopilot a little bit, and maybe not the Lakers, but the other two for sure. I wondered if that maybe was a little bit of a different feeling this year to kind of have teams bringing their all every night, maybe not so much lately, but he kind of agreed, and I think, you know, didn't give too much there, but I don't know if it was that question or a different one where he said, he added on his own that there have been times, like you just mentioned, where the mood of the team did feel a little bit woe is me and kind of just overly negative when things started to go the wrong way. And there wasn't that built-in leadership, whether from guys like himself and the veterans on this year's team or even just the coaching staff and front office, that's maybe a little bit more focused on that culture aspect. But regardless, I do agree with you that when things have gotten bad, it's never really felt extreme to the extent that it has in years past. And they've still, like, I think that's sort of what I was trying to get at too, with the big picture identity of this team is still one, I think, of just competitiveness and, you know, some principles on each end of the floor that, you know, they might be bad at them some nights, but they haven't gotten away from them entirely.
Yeah, that's a good point you bring up there as far as just some of their game plans too, as far as there's been some nights, especially when Monty Williams comes to the press conferences, he's very frustrated, you can tell, as far as not following the game plans. But when they do follow them, I think more often than not, the Suns are winning those games because they have the mental fortitude and just the overall ability to coincide a game plan and really follow it T by T. And there's been very few far nights between over the last 6 weeks of this stretch for the Suns. Like you mentioned, 9-20 since that 4-20 start, since that 7-4 start. But when you look at the Suns' record, 16-24 so far this year, Brennan, through the first 40 games, where would you label the Suns as far as in the Western Conference? Do you think they're more so a contender for the 8th seed, or do you think they're a pretender?
No, I don't think that they are a legitimate player in the playoff race right now. We kind of touched on that when we were recapping last night's game, and I think that's just the reality. I think, you know, you look at some of the teams rounding into shape. This is the part of the year with the Suns at full strength where they should be getting better, and they aren't. And, you know, I think that the defense maybe was even more outlier good than we thought at the time early in the season. And, you know, Monty Williams has even put it pretty specifically himself lately, saying that the, you know, kind of recipe to make the playoffs, especially in the West, is to have a top 10 or so offense and a defense between 10 and 20. Well, the Suns' defense for most of the year now has been between 20 and 30, and you can't really expect to be consistently good as an overall team if that's how you're going to play. You could be the best offense in the NBA, and if you're not going to stop the other team, it's really not going to matter most nights. I just think that's where the Suns are right now.
Let me ask you this, because I agree with you on most parts, just because I feel like this Suns team probably is going to be in that low 30s range, around 32, 33 wins when we shake things out just because the schedule gets so much tougher after this January stretch that the Suns are going to do well and gain some ground in, but they unfortunately have not done that. But when you look at this 8 seed, Brennan, when you have San Antonio, I mean, like you talked about a couple of days ago, Oklahoma City is really cruising as far as the 7 seed goes. You have Memphis, you have San Antonio, Portland, Phoenix, Minnesota, Sacramento, New Orleans in there as well, if you want to throw them in the red zone, getting back next week for the first time. What do you think is the win total it's going to take to get this 8 seed? Because I know Clean the Glass has the Suns at 36, 37 wins. Do you think that's enough in this kind of race right now for the 8?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, no, because whatever the Suns end up at, I expect to not be enough if I'm assuming that they are not going to be the team to make the playoffs and that other teams will end up better than them. So, you know, even if it's not 34, which would just be doubling their, assuming they win tomorrow, their 41-game win total, you know, even if it's 37, I just think there's teams better than them. So however it shakes out, you know, I think from a win total perspective, I would assume it's probably going to take somewhere around the 40 or so that it's taken the past few years, maybe a little lower, because I do think the bottom is a little worse this year in the Western Conference. But if you look around some of the other teams' expected wins over the course of a season from that same Cleaning the Glass model, even San Antonio has 39. They're probably the favorites to take that spot right now. Portland a little bit above the Suns as well. But, you know, I would say maybe the lowest you could expect would be 38. It would be surprising to me to not see a team make a late season run with the trade deadline still up in the air. But I just, you know, even if the Suns get to that 37, I mean, we haven't seen a 37 game winner make the playoffs in the West. I can't remember when that happened last.
Yeah, I think it's been maybe since the Warriors days when they upset the one seed Jazz, and that was like 10 years ago. I think they might have even more than 37 wins. It's probably, I think, like 40 or 42. So yeah, it's been a very long time, I think. But anything else you want to cover as far as this first section goes, Brian, as far as the team aspects of the Suns, the first 40 games of the year?
No, I think that covers it.
Alrighty, guys, that's going to do it for our first segment here. We're going to go into our individual Suns topics here as far as who's stood out the most the first half of the season, and maybe who hasn't. But before we do that, I want to tell you about our sponsor of today's show. And the first one comes to us from MyBookie. Are you a Tide fan that knows football so well that you could choose any game and call it? Well, MyBookie is the place for you because it lets you turn all your sports knowledge into cash in your wallet. Between football season, NBA, and the start of college basketball season, it's time to get off the sideline and get in the action with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing, go to mybookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win than they do. Again, that is mybookie.ag. Enter promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKODN, to get the offer. Once again, it's promo code LOCKEDON to take advantage of MyBookie's generous sign-up offer today. You play, you win, and you get paid.
Want to also let you guys know about the second sponsor of today's show, which is the Arizona Cactus League Spring Training. You got 10 stadiums right here in the Valley where some of your favorite baseball teams will go. And if it's not your favorite, it's really the most high-level competition you'll ever get in one place in any sport. And it's all over the course of about a month, so you can make an extended stay out of it. You can do a quick weekend, but you're going to be able to see a ton of baseball regardless. These stadiums are all within 50 miles of one another, right near restaurants, bars, live music, museums. So it doesn't just have to be a trip about baseball. You can use it as an excuse to come out here and see some stuff you've never seen before. Maybe you've been meaning your whole life to get to the Grand Canyon. I know I've only been, I think, once or twice in my whole life, and I live in the Valley. So don't be like me. Come out here, get that done as well, and see some baseball games in between. If you want to bring the kids along or have to bring the kids along, don't worry. Arizona is a fantastic destination for families as well. We have resorts, hotels, and like I said, museums, aquariums, and even some theme parks to keep the kiddos occupied and maybe give them something to do if they humor you and come out to a baseball game with the adults. Plan your spring training getaway at visitarizona.com/springtraining to take advantage of all of these opportunities and have a little bit of fun this spring. Again, that's visitarizona.com/springtraining. Alrighty. We don't want to get too much into, you know, the nitty-gritty of individual players because we are just around the corner from our second player report cards in about 15 games or so here. But Evan, let's dive into kind of some maybe bigger picture concepts. I think the place that I want to start, just because it is something that we did talk so much about, especially after the signing of Ricky Rubio, but really since the Suns have been looking for a point guard, which dates back to, what, November of 2017 when they traded Eric Bledsoe, and what type of player fit next to Devin Booker, what role was best for Devin Booker. I think it's especially interesting coming off of a game in Atlanta on Tuesday night where we did see, for the first real stretch of the season, point Booker again with the three wings and DeAndre Ayton. So how have you felt? I mean, what kind of things can we learn about how Devin Booker has adapted his game a little bit to more of an off-ball role?
I think it's definitely helped him out a lot just through the first 30 or so games we've seen with alongside Ricky Rubio. When Rubio's in the court with Booker, Booker is just in such a comfortable role off the ball, and you see him just being able to get easy cuts to the basket or find the opening, and Rubio's going to go to that zone. And you just see the chemistry between those two guys and just how much a burden is off Booker's shoulders as far as getting other guys involved too. He can just get his own bucket. I think that does a lot for a guy like Booker too. We've seen his efficiency skyrocket this year because of a guy like Ricky Rubio and his presence there. But I also think Booker's taking smarter shots too. That's also playing into this. And I think seeing more point Booker in small doses makes sense for this team, especially this year's team, with how bad the backup point guard situation is behind Rubio. But I think James Jones has kind of proven us right so far, or at least proven himself right so far, that adding a pass-first point guard like Ricky Rubio alongside a high-volume scorer like Devin Booker makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, you know, I think ultimately I feel like there's probably, to maximize Booker and even just create the best offense for this Suns team, I think there's a little bit of a better fit that you could find. But considering the circumstances, you don't just get to pick a player out of the hat and get them. And I think that Ricky Rubio, not only his passing and his ability to just push the pace and excel in transition, excel in the open floor, turn defense into offense, those types of things that we've seen him do, I just think his adaptability is pretty good. And I think just the ability to play, maybe just the experience level that he has, because he's a guy, you know, earlier in his career who I think would have been an even worse fit with Devin Booker. He wasn't a guy who used to even take those spot up threes, wasn't a guy that really had any use off the ball. I think he's gotten better with that stuff. I think that he's a guy who we've seen Monty Williams juggle his role quite a bit. I think that's not something everybody would react well to, you know, just his kind of comfort level as a veteran in this league, I think is, can't go underestimated either. You think about Terry Rozier or some of the other guys the Suns were targeting, were they going to be okay with such constant change and tinkering? Maybe not. And I don't know the answer to any of those things, but I think that's something that Rubio has brought to this team. I think the reality is just Devin Booker at this point in time is going to maybe, and maybe forever, and is going to be more of a, you know, Dwayne Wade, Donovan Mitchell, Jimmy Butler, Bradley Beal type of, he is a primary scorer, but a secondary creator. And those types of players do really well for themselves in this league. It's just a little different, I think, than the expectation we had of Booker early in his career. I just don't see them going back to heavy minutes with him at the one anytime soon.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there as far as heavy minutes go. And I think Booker has shown, like you mentioned, him being a secondary creator, well, being a high-volume scorer, those guys do very well in this league. Another one like Luka Doncic, too. They're along a similar path as far as those kind of creators in this league go on scoring and playmaking goes. But as far as Booker and his development so far this year, Brent, just from a general standpoint, what's been the year five leap that you've noticed the most? Because there's been a couple things. I know efficiency is one thing, defensive effort's another thing as far as what we've seen the biggest improvements in for Booker. Which one has been the most important for you to see in year five?
Just what his biggest improvement is?
Yeah, between what I mentioned there as far as his defensive effort or his efficiency, what's been the biggest standout?
Yeah. No, I got you. I think that it has to be the efficiency, because that is held up all year. And the three-point shooting isn't where it was early in the season where it was above 40%. I mean, even first thing in the year, it was up way above 40%. But you know, that has held constant. He continues to be an incredible free throw shooter. His 2-point efficiency is 56, which is just 56%, which is just wild. His true shooting still over 62%. Those things are pretty constant all year. Even, you know, the forearm injury kind of slowed him down for a little bit, but it didn't even really do much of a dent there. So that's it to me. I think that the defensive intensity, just the overall impact on defense, it's been a little more impressive lately, taking some of these point guard matchups and doing pretty well there. But overall, there have been nights, I think, where his defense has been a problem, where it's been, you know, not necessarily the core cause of their poor overall defense, but definitely not helping it. And, you know, that's still been the book on him, no pun intended, for his whole career. And that really hasn't gone away, even if we have seen some flashes.
Yeah, the efficiency has definitely been one of the things I've looked at this year, especially the true shooting percentage skyrocketing up to where it was last year and the year before that. And then you also look at the playmaking ability still maintaining. I think it's a very good positive. His defensive effort really wanes as far as the game situations go, but him at least showing more effort this year is definitely a good sign. But when you look at the overall, Brendan, the Suns roster, outside of Booker, 26 points per game, Kelly Oubre, 18 points per game, Ayton having 16 points per game in his first 10 games of the year so far. After those three players, you really don't have many other guys who can create for themselves. Rubio's not really a creator as far as himself from the offensive end. Dario's not that kind of guy. Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges. I feel like this team, as far as what they could look for at the deadline or maybe long term, is that I feel like they need a guy outside of Booker and Oubre who can create their own shot. And that it's been obvious the first 40 games this year that they're missing that kind of element.
Definitely. I mean, and I would even say that, you know, Kelly Oubre, not really that type of player either. I think he can, but, you know, he's not really going to run a pick and roll. He's not quite going to isolate and be able to get a great shot that way. So you're going to need lots of help, I think, on that, in that area, just guys who can do it consistently. And, you know, even if Ty Jerome looks a little better in time, he's not going to be that type of player, and neither is Cam Johnson, at least from what we've seen through their college and early pro careers. So you're counting on DeAndre Ayton to do it, and you're going to have to find some of that in free agency as you continue to build this team. So I do agree with you there. I would also just add, too, that one of the things we thought about this team was that they were going to be incredible at shooting, and they've not been that. You know, I think Dario Saric has been disappointing in that area. You know, not really a knockdown guy. The career-long numbers for him just aren't really showing that anymore, and I think we need to start changing the way we think about him as a shooter overall. You know, Ayton not taking them, Baines coming back down to earth, Rubio's hot start not sustaining, Mikal Bridges refusing to really take those shots anymore. It's been a lot of players all at the same time coming up cold, and that's really hurt them. And I think that's, you know, as far as big picture thoughts go, I think that is one of the main reasons that they've just not been able to put the offense together. And you know, from an individual perspective, I think it changes the way we have to think about a lot of those guys, Dario, Mikal, kind of really everybody on this roster who came into the year thinking that they would be a shooter. Almost no one has.
Yeah, outside of Cam Johnson, who's shooting 39.3%. I don't know where this offense as far as three-point shooting would be without Cam Johnson at this point, because Booker is the only other guy at 36%. Okobo's at 38.6 on 1.4 per game, but he's been at sort of a low volume. Kelly Oubre is 34.9%. So, yeah, not really many guys as far as above-average three-point shooters on this team, but any other team aspects, Brennan, as far as individual stats you want to go over here? Because maybe a guy like Dario Saric, I mean, we've hit on him before as far as the trade ideas for him, but it seems like at this point that he's all but gone this time next year. I just don't see him coming back in a reserve role if we're looking ahead a little bit, just because he's still playing only 19 minutes per game since Mikal and Cam Johnson still continue to have bigger roles here. And if he really was a main long-term piece, we kind of covered this in that full episode we did about Dario a week or two ago, but if he was a considered long-term piece, he'd be playing a lot more minutes per game for sure right now.
Yeah, and we talked about him at length, and we really touch on him almost every game now with his role fluctuating. You know, we talked about Ayton and Oubre earlier this week, so I think that's a good snapshot, and we'll have plenty more time to do, as we said, our report cards here in probably, you know, 3 weeks or so. So no, I don't think we have much else there. Just wanted to remind everybody before we jump to our final segment, talk a little bit about the leadership at the top of things for the Suns. You know, another summer of a lot of change up top with the front office and coaching staff. Before that, though, just a quick reminder, if you have not subscribed to the show, but you're just finding us maybe for the first time, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. It's the easiest, best way to keep up with everything we do here, Monday through Friday, of course, recapping games, giving you analysis like this. Any news that comes out, we will be on top of as well. If you are already subscribed to the show and you're wondering how to support us, write us a review. I wanted to shout out Seldom Seen Schweig, I think is how you say it. He wrote, "I listen to it every day that it is on," which is every day on Monday. So thanks to you there. And I don't know how to say your name, but we appreciate the review. Anyone else who wants to support the show, go ahead and write us one as well. We will read it on the air. If you have a question for us, feel free to include it there as well. And let's move on here to the front office. Okay, so I think that one thing, we talked about it, I think, in our episode about James Jones and his comments on Brightside Night, Evan, but the thing that still stands out to me is the relationship. You know, we don't know everything. We probably know very little as far as the grand package here, but the number one takeaway from the press conference when Monty Williams was introduced was the relationship between him and James Jones. And I think, you know, every time we get a chance to hear more about that or get a peek in behind the curtain of what that dynamic is like, I think that continues to be something that has to be seen as a positive for this franchise, which has seen so little consistency at those two spots over the past decade.
Yeah, and you even go back to when the Suns were in their heyday. I mean, Mike D'Antoni and Steve Kerr, I believe, didn't have their sort of complimentary stuff at the end. Yeah, it was not. And you go to the McDonough era where it's just a cycling in and out of head coaches, and McDonough seemingly not getting a lot of character, the check marks going, and that did not go well for them in that era. But like you mentioned, Monty Williams and James Jones seem like they have a lot of similarities. We caught on that very early on in May when he was introduced, and we talked about it at length. Right that day, I talked to Rizzo Arena during his press conference because it was seeming like they shared a plan, they shared a vision, and we even saw it earlier this year, DeAndre and just both those guys having a conversation, sitting down wherever it was, in James Jones' office or somewhere on the court, where they're talking about DeAndre Ayton maybe playing more four. Obviously, I know that didn't go well, but it just shows that they're collaborating on ideas. And I feel like that's really rare nowadays as far as coaches and GMs being so open about their relationship with each other.
Yeah, it makes me think of the Cleveland Browns right now, who hired their plan B from last summer and rehired him to be their head coach this year in Kevin Stefanski, and still don't have a general manager. So there's plenty of situations where the process is just so flawed with how teams do these things in every sport. So to see James Jones not only be the one to actually get to hire his own head coach there, but also for it to be somebody that he has a built-in relationship with, who has experience doing the job in Monty Williams, been a head coach before, I think all those things have to be just seen as positives. We saw Earl Watson get his first shot way too early here. We saw Igor Kokoschkov not really be given the tools to succeed, and not even, you know, even just something as simple that we can forget about as picking your own assistant staff. Monty Williams went through each stepping stone of his path to this Suns organization and pulled assistants from all those places to come help him build this group up in Phoenix. I think that, you know, even amid the losing, that has to be a reminder that we give that it is, you know, the process of this stuff has been way more solid than it ever was before. The thing that I still don't have an answer for, that you probably never will, again, with how infrequently we're provided the insight on stuff like this, I don't really know how Jeff Bauer was hired, what his exact role is, and kind of what guidance he gives on a daily basis. I know he was kind of brought in to be the adult in the room, the experienced guy, has a relationship with Monty Williams, but we still just kind of have very little knowledge of what's up with him.
Yeah, it seems like he's just kind of like the man in the room, like you said, just has a role in the organization. Unfortunately, we haven't had a chance to talk to Jeff Bauer on the record yet, and I don't know if we ever will have that chance, just because it seems like he's so in the background that it just seems like at this point you'd feel like they introduced him to the media, but I don't think that's going to happen at this point. It's been
not
almost
anymore. It'd be kind of awkward.
Yeah.
The guy we hired 2 years ago, here he is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I feel like overall, just with this, front office with Jones, and you have Bauer in there, then you have Trevor Buxton, Monty Williams playing a role between the front office and the coach, as far as I feel like there's a good relationship between both sides there. I feel like the structure and the development and environment that the Suns put in place, I know James Jones put a heavy emphasis on that this offseason, so did Monty Williams. I feel like we're actually seeing the benefits of that so far. We've seen players like DeAndre Ayton have improvements in some areas, and that's doing a slower development than we had hoped with DeAndre Ayton, but there's at least some improvements going on there. Elia Okobo looks better on some nights than we saw last year. Mikal Bridges looks maybe a little more consistent than we saw his rookie year. I mean, there's a few examples as far as the player development with this coaching staff paying off so far.
Yeah, I think the player development, I agree with everything you said. I also think that it'll be something where we'll have to see in time, especially, you know, can they create consistency enough in this just organization overall that exponential impact, the year after year of the same message, the same culture, the same just day-to-day routines, can that build into something where kind of a rising tide that lifts all the players on this roster? That's, I think, just underestimated in every sport a lot of the time, because why do we really think that Miami or San Antonio or even Boston, teams that tend to have success with player development, it's not because Danny Ainge knows something that the rest of the league doesn't know. It's not because Boston, something's in the air and those guys just breathe and suddenly become smarter, better, more mature athletes. It's that continuity and know-how and stuff is built over time, and the Suns are just so far from that. So, you know, I think that's part of the reason I keep coming back to that relationship between Williams and Jones and the freedom that each of them have under Robert Sarver, seemingly. You know, again, we don't know necessarily, but seems that way more than in the past, that all of that stuff, I think that's where you start to look in the future, and you have to be pretty optimistic that if all of that can maintain and they can make progress on the court as well and keep those guys' jobs safe, that's when you start to think about a legitimate long-term organization that can breed success.
We can close on this point here, Brandon, just because we don't have the chance to talk in depth about them during our report cards we do three times a year during the season. But as far as James Jones and Monty Williams go, how would you grade them? Jones, especially since he was hired as the full-time GM last October, but also Monty Williams in his first season, as far as how they've done as far as general manager goes, how Jones has operated the waters of that, getting Monty Williams on board in the first place, doing all these moves, but also Monty Williams in the case of what he's done the first 40 games as the Suns coach. Because I feel like Jones has proven me wrong on a few points, but also I feel like his asset management has been really rough at some points, as like we saw at the Dario Saric trade for Cam Johnson. If Dario's a guy who's traded here in the next month or so, or he's off the team next year, that just simply was a bad asset evaluation there, because I don't think he moved back five spots in that kind of draft for a guy who's only there for 1 year. But also from the positive standpoint, getting Monty Williams on board, the Kelly Oubre trade, then Monty Williams himself, just I feel like he's done a pretty good job with his rotation so far. I've been a fan of that. I feel like he's been very open too, which I've really enjoyed. So what's been your thoughts on those two?
Yeah, I would give Jones probably a B+. I think that might be a little higher than some people would have it, but I do think that there's something to be said for that initial step of pulling a just downtrodden franchise out of the mud and figuring some steps out to get out. I think that, yes, the asset management's been pretty poor on the whole. I think that Cam Johnson trade, I think it really could end up being something that we look back on as a genuine screw up that genuinely hurt the progress of the team, the ability to get some of the guys that they missed out on, and even the pick of Cam Johnson at 11. That's something else that needs to be part of it, because we've seen guys picked after 11 who are playing well recently. So that's a big one. Some of the other smaller stuff has to be weighed in, but I think overall just the kind of vision that he's shown has been smart. He's done a good job of acquiring young veterans who have been helpful to the team. Kelly Oubre, obviously the most notable example. I would say Monty, you know, I have a hard time getting out of the A range, so I would say an A-. You know, I think he has to be held responsible for some of the slippage on defense. I've talked a lot about how they've gotten away from even the way that they played defense early in the season that was so successful. Maybe it was never going to sustain once teams started to game plan for it. I think teams did start to game plan for it, but just to move away from it so early and not have an answer for how to get back to that level of effectiveness in a different way. And it's kind of like, well, you change from a bad style to a worse style here, and you're still pretty bad on defense. That's coaching to me is the answer there. And maybe the talent's not there, but not perfect, but an A minus for me.
Yeah, no complaints here on those grades. I think I'd be very similar to you on that. And I feel like that probably wraps this up, Brian, unless you wanted to add anything else as far as Jones or Monty or any of these other front officer players go. Would you want to add anything else?
No, I think we got to everything, and people can look forward to our player report card double episodes that we always do here in a few weeks. But yeah, I mean, I hope we didn't get anything too far off. I feel like got to be pretty optimistic, but obviously just the record kind of holds that back a little bit.
Yeah, 18-24 through the first 40 games of the season, or excuse me, 16-24 through the first 40 games of the season for the Phoenix Suns, and a very important stretch of games for the Suns, kind of as we've kind of outlined already for you guys. If you didn't know before you listen to this episode, Kelly Oubre is officially out Thursday due to concussion. He's in concussion protocol. The Suns PR released a statement on that, so Oubre will be missing an important game on Thursday. But we did cover a lot of ground for you guys today as far as all aspects of this Phoenix Suns team. Really went under the microscope as far as general team philosophy, individual aspects, and also the front office and coaching staff. So hope you guys all enjoyed that episode of Locked On Suns today. We'll be back to you guys tomorrow for our next episode recapping the next game.